Welcome to the Four Outdoorsman, everybody. Steve Straczynski, the Stew Man, the wild card. My buddy to my left is Boomer.
What do you know, buddy? The weather is absolutely gorgeous out right now.
Hey, where's the third outdoorsman, man?
I think he is in a beautiful state called Montana.
Yeah, Mark Lukey, the producer and the third of the four outdoorsmen. Actually, there's only three of us. We don't want to confuse you guys. We'll tell you the story sometime over a cold beer. But
Mark, we have beautiful Diana with us, too.
Yeah, my gorgeous wife Diana's in the... She's all excited reading the newspaper right now. She's glad to be here. But Mark Lukey is in someplace in Montana trying to learn how to fly fish with some people from Ron Shearer Productions.
Yeah, so I tell you what a tough life.
Yeah, life.
But he is missed. We do miss producer Mark kind of sitting right over there to our left. He always keeps us in line, doesn't he? Like keeps us on track. How much time's left before break? Don't forget to mention this. Yeah, we didn't do a Four Outdoorsmen shout out.
He's pretty good about... Well, that's right. He's pretty good about... preventing me from swearing on the air. That's what Mark Lukey's job is.
Well, I tell you what a busy week.
Hey, can I
stuff
talk
going on?
Yeah, I'll do a shout out. You talked about a shout out first.
Yeah.
Again, thanks for joining the Four Outdoorsmen. By the way, if you are listening to this show live right now, you are listening on 95.9 FM because Bob Total Country right now is playing the Minnesota Lynx basketball game. And as soon as that game is over, it's going to float
gonna
right
shift
back
over to us,
the
right?
Bob Total Country. So, hey, I bet you're surprised listening to 95.9 FM. But I'll tell you what, if this is the first time and you are surprised, listen to the show for 15 minutes because the seventh person who calls wins 1,000. No, I'm just kidding you. Were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to say it's been a beautiful week. It's kind of rainy a little bit, but it was nice. And there was a lot going on up here in the Midwest. So the Big Bass Elite Tournament was in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Those are the big shots.
That's my wife's home water. She loves to fish that lake. And remember a week ago when we were talking about fishing that the topwater bite had been really hot when we had another fishing show where you're throwing plastic frogs?
By the way, he's talking about another fishing show. That's the name of the show. It's called Another Fishing Show. Great guest we had on last week.
Yeah.
It's a riot, but go ahead.
Yeah, and what was interesting enough, it was one on a frog bite. And congratulations to Ish Monroe. He's now won his fifth tournament. Now he's been doing it for years. And I think he did it frogging.
Is that like the old, that's the brand new hula popper. We used to call them hula poppers back in the 1960s.
Yeah, you know, a hula popper and stuff like that. You know, sometimes you call it like a wake bait. It'll make a little traction. But those frogs, you can skip it on top of lily pads, on duckweed. And in fact, a couple years ago, another friend of the show, Bill Labansky, remember Captain Bill?
Yep.
Bill and I went frogging on La Crosse or near it when Nicole had a tournament. We weren't in the same pools of the water. And it's an absolute hoot on that body of water because they said that when the duckweed gets down there and the water was up like, I don't know, like 10 feet or something like that, Stew, all those frogs come out to play. Now, if I was a frog, Diana, why would I go in the water after I see
if
all my buddies
frog,
getting eaten by a largemouth bass?
If you were a frog, Diana would try to turn you into a prince. Maybe she already did. Look
hey, there
guy.
Is Princess and the Frog. That was one of my daughter's favorite movies.
You know, I've never done that. I fished with hula poppers when I was a kid a little bit, and it is exciting. We've had some topwater action when I was younger, but I can't picture... by lily pads or in the cabbage, whatever, and watching a 4 or 5 pound largemouth take that thing down right from the top of the
lake. The hardest thing to do with that is giving that pause because the hooks are on the top. So when that bass comes up and inhales that frog, you have to let it literally sit for a second. You want to jerk it right away, but you let it sit for a second and then you wait till you get that tension and then you set the hook like you have jaws on the other line.
So you're telling me that that lure you're talking about has... treble hooks probably on...
Yeah, two hooks. They go right up the top of the body. So that way the weeds don't get stuck on the hooks.
I know what you're talking about. Okay, okay. And that hook is embedded a little bit into the lure itself.
Yep, right into the soft plastic. But so congratulations to Ish on that. A lot of other weird stuff going on. I know you've got a great show, right? You got some big guests to this week.
We have a lot of fun. Yeah, we got Mark Lukey, one of our first guests. He'll be on for about 5 minutes in a few minutes. Then we're going to talk to Rob Driesline. Of course, he's the managing editor of the Outdoor News, My Bible, for the outdoor stuff. He's going to talk about a lot of things. Pheasant nesting, a lot of rain and what's happening to the pheasant nesting. He went bull fishing here last week. And going to talk about Jolly Ann Lake.
Is that lake so special?
It's so cool because the guy who owns a lot of land around this boat axis says, hey, I own this boat axis, and he blocked it off. He blocked it off, and it's the
but
only
it
access.
Stop like, there, does it?
No,
Stew.
It doesn't.
We're not going to tell our listeners, but it doesn't stop with him blocking it off.
He had a story.
Didn't make the DNR happy.
He had a story about that in the outdoor news this last week, and he's also going to talk about Twin Metals and the mining situation up in the Boundary Waters. It's getting really, really heated.
Yep.
the controversy, the millions and millions and millions of dollars those companies are spending to get the rights to mine up
there.
And
I tell you what, I remember at the dairy booth, you know, you go get the milkshakes at the Minnesota State Fair.
I never had a milkshake.
With people petitioning against the mining going on in the Boundary Waters. I'll never forget that. And I stood there and listened to them and then kind of stayed neutral on the whole thing, but that was really interesting. And then, Stru,
what's that?
You decided to go big time. So if you're tuning in to the 4 Outdoorsmen on Bob Country, thank you for tuning in. At 6:40, Stru Man, what'd you do?
I got the prettiest girl in the hunting game darn near.
Who'd you get?
I got Tiffany Lukoski. She's a...
Lee and Tiffany.
Yeah, they're from... They have a television show called The Crush. They've been out for about 10 years. You know they have over 500,000 followers on their Facebook page.
But you know what? They're kind of the iconic hunting couple. You know, they started, they're from Minnesota, and then they moved down to Iowa.
Yep.
And they have some amazing land in Iowa and harvest some beautiful bucks, but they hunt all over the world.
You know, I follow this show quite a bit, as a matter of fact. You can only watch so much when you're doing this gig, but you got to kind of keep up on it. And I follow them a lot because of their background, the local people. As a matter of fact, both Lee and Tiffany are heading back to Iowa right now from, I think, one of the parents' cabins someplace in northern Minnesota. So Lee's going to be doing one thing in a different vehicle. We're going to have Tiffany on at about 6:40, 6:45, talking about what's happening with the Crush.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. So you got any weird news for us, Wildfire?
I just have to ask you this. Have you ever elk hunted?
No, but it is on my bucket list. I have applied for a tag before down in New Mexico. Excuse me, because in New Mexico, it doesn't go by points. It basically goes by the luck of the draw. Most states, when you go elk hunting, you either can buy a landowner tag, which it's like 15 to 20 grand, which is not in the Stelmac budget, or you can apply, and certain states give you preference points if you don't get drawn, right? It's kind of like the way the DNR used to do a doe license in the state of Minnesota. If you didn't get one, in a buck only, after about 3 or 4 years, you'd get drawn.
Or get a camping permit at the Boundary Waters. I think if you didn't get one the year before, you are kind of ahead of the line the next year.
So I haven't been lucky enough to score one. And I want to go to New Mexico because New Mexico has this little place called the Gila, or the Gila Mountains, and because of the food source there with alfalfa, they get some of the biggest racks on those elks that people pay $30,000 to $40,000 to go hunt.
I know nothing about elk hunting, obviously. I know nothing about the outdoors except golfing.
Good.
Yeah, I think elk is better than moose, better than anything. I've had it. Yep. I love it. But I have heard that town, what's the area you call
it?
Yeah,
Gila,
I've heard of it from many people. So apparently it is the bucket list destination.
Yep.
In Wisconsin, they open up an elk hunting. Mark Lukey's ready? All right, we'll talk about elk hunting in a couple of seconds. I think we've got a guest now. Mark told me, Mark's in Montana, don't know what town, but he told me he's on extended service on his cell phone. So if we can't hear him very quickly, Brandon, we're going to pull the plug and talk later on. Hey, Lukey, are you there, buddy?
Hey, Stu, can you hear me?
Absolutely, perfectly. It's almost like you're sitting where my gorgeous wife, Diana, is.
It's awfully beautiful here. I'm sitting on the banks of the Bighorn River in Montana, ready to go fly fishing.
Mark, I tell you what, the things you do for your work should be commended. I mean, just the extra stretch of the mile for you to tell your bosses at Ron Share Productions, I'll go out there and fly fish in Montana for you guys. My hats are off to you, buddy.
I'm excited, and to say I'm a novice would be an understatement. I've maybe fly fished once in my life when I was a kid for panfish, but my boss Scott gave us a lesson there about last Wednesday, and I'm ready to go.
So, have you fly fished yet, Mark? Or I know you just got it. Did you just get in today?
Yeah, we flew into Billings and drove to the Kingfisher Lodge, right on the banks of the river, and it is so beautiful here, I can't even explain it.
I tell you what, I've been to Bozeman, Montana. I was there for a wedding, and our buddy Brian Zepp is working in Bozeman right now. I don't know exactly where you are, but Diana and I spent about 4 days there, and it was probably one of the three most beautiful places I ever was. Can you make a living there? It's hard to leave that place. Boy, good for you, buddy.
Yeah, we're on the deck of a log cabin facing west, kind of overlooking the mountains. It's just absolutely incredible.
Well, you know, Mark, back in my college days, and I lived down in Missouri for a while, I made some friends down there, and we used to, and that's where I picked up fly fishing. I don't do it much up north anymore because we just don't have the places for it. And the toughest thing for me at first is you're probably going to use a thing called like a little strike indicator, which is like red yarn, and they're going to have some gel around it. And once that goes down, right, because you just let your bait just kind of fly down there. I know you can cast and look real fancy, but they always told me just make, you know, one or two casts and let it just run downstream. And then when that indicator goes down, you set the hook. Well, when you set the hook, you basically pull on your cord, right, Mark? And then you set the rod back.
Yeah, we're going to be fishing with indicators. I guess it's called nymph fishing, where you're fishing, the water's high. So we are going to be fishing below the surface of the water. Yep. But do you guys want to get into a detailed tactic? Because I got my boss, Scott, here. He can talk for a couple minutes.
Do we have to? No, I want to talk to Scott because I want a job.
Talk to Scott. We want to see what kind of fly fishing he's going to be doing.
All right, I'm going to put Scott on, and he can give you a little more detail of what's going on here in Montana. All right, here he is.
Mr. Scott Franson, welcome to the Four Outdoorsmen on Bob Country. Boomer and Strew here, buddy.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're doing well, pal.
We'd be doing better. Apparently, the tickets for Strew and I to go fly fishing with you guys, they weren't at Delta when we showed up, so we had to go into studio tonight.
No, they didn't come in the mail like they're supposed to?
They didn't come in the mail, but Scott, I know you are an avid fly fisherman, and back in the day when I went down to college in Missouri and then worked down there for about 10 years, I picked up fly fishing because I had friends that had property near Greer's Ferry, which was the Little Red River, and kind of picked up the game a little bit, and I was talking to Mark about some tactics, but can you share with our listeners on the Four Outdoors and on Bob Country how you guys are going to go about approaching fly fishing on the Bighorn?
Sure, I'll do my best. To give you a little background, the Bighorn is what's called a tailwater fishery, so it's all the water on this river is coming out from a dam. And right now, because there's been a lot of snow and rain in Montana this spring, they're letting a lot of water out of the dam. So the river's going to be kind of big and kind of quick. So we will be fishing subsurface, and I think Mark probably told you nymphing, but we have to use, you know, a lot of weight. I think the river's at 13,000 cubic feet or something like that. So but think of it like you're almost like walleye fishing. There's a lot more water, so more weight to get the flies closer where the fish are hanging in the river. And then we're fishing out of boats. We'll have one fisherman in the front of the boat and one in the back, and we'll have a guide in the middle rowing the boat and trying to keep us to the best of their ability with the river being be fast in the fish zone. So they slow the boat down so that your flies are kind of traveling at the rate of the current and getting down into the areas where the fish are hanging.
So, Scott, I remember we used to use, like, tubes that we would sit in when we would float down the river. Do you guys just use boats there because the water is high or it's moving fast, or do you guys ever tube it as well?
We do tube it later when the river is lower. If it's like, say, 6,000 cubic feet or lower, there's a lot of guys that will fish out of tubes. When it's this fast, I think that makes it a little harder. And most of the people you see fishing are fishing out of boats. There are a few places you can still get in the river and do a little wade fishing, but they're few and far between when the river is just kind of high and fast.
So one thing I remember, Scott, from our days of novice fly fishing down in Arkansas was that clean water is very important. What I mean by clean water is when you have like a rainfall or there's water coming in, it can stain up the water and that can make the bite a little tougher. Is that going to apply to what you guys are trying to do in Montana this week?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, luckily we have good weather this week, and because it's a tailwater fishery, the upper kind of 5 miles or 6 miles of the Bighorn is always pretty clear because there's no tributaries flowing into it to put silt and mud into it when there's a heavy rain. Once you get about 9 miles past where the dam is, or it's called After Bay, where you put your boats in, there's a couple of rivers that flow in there, and when it's raining a lot in the mountains, they'll just put a ton of dirt and silt into the river, and it gets pretty murky below there. So we should be in good shape in the upper, 6 to 8 miles of the river, and just have pretty clear water, I would think.
Hey, Scott Strewman here. I'm a left-handed poleaxe from the east side of St. Paul. What are you fishing for?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
What are you fishing for? What is your goal? What's your target?
We're fishing for a rainbow trout and brown trout.
Okay. Who's the cook tonight? Are you going to cook them tonight? You'll keep a couple, won't you?
I'm sorry. I'm having a tough time hearing you.
Are you going to keep a couple of those and cook them up?
Oh, you know, you can keep brown trout on the Bighorn River. I think the limit is maybe 4 or 5, but I don't know if we're going to be keeping any or cooking them at all. I think we're just going to catch them and let them go.
Now, Scott, with that type of catch and release, if people do fish in that part of the Bighorn to harvest fish and eat them, are there slots out there? I know you talked about you thought the number you could keep is 4, but are there certain slots for certain species of trout as well?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you, because I've never looked at that part of the regulation because we've never wanted to keep any. But the Bighorn River, it's not just a fly fishing river. There's a lot of people that will float it and cast Raplas or spinner baits or things like that and catch trout. Or I think sometimes even fish with live bait. When the water is this high in the dam, it's spilling over parts of the dam and the spillways, and there's emerald shiners coming across. So I've read some reports that people are using shiners or streamer patterns that look like kind of crippled shiners to catch trout. So it's really a very multifaceted river in terms of how you can fish it and how people like to fish it.
Hey, Scott, I'll tell you what, this sounds like one heck of a trip, and I know all the people that you're with are very, very fortunate, including our buddy Mark, but I want you to do one thing for us. I want to make sure that you or someone videotapes Mark when he's doing his fly fishing, and hopefully he brings one or two in, because we want to post it, and I want to see how he's doing, so make sure someone videotapes for us if you would, all right?
We'll do that.
All right, buddy, we got to let you go. Hang on, Bob. Boomer's got one more thing to say.
Say, hey, Scott, thanks for joining us. Good luck fishing, and we can't wait to see some pictures and videos.
All right, thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
You bet. Have fun and be safe. Well, I tell you what, does that sound like fun?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of getting me excited when I used to fly fish down there in Arkansas because it's such a different tactic. And when that indicator goes down, Stru, it's not just like setting the hook and reeling. You're actually stripping line like this to set the hook and then bringing your rod back. And then as you try to bring that fish close to you, you have to strip more line. So you're pulling on the line versus reeling. And then when that trout gets close enough, usually on your belt or on your vest, you have like a net, a little net. So
I've
then
seen
you're
those,
trying to
yeah.
hold that, and you're trying to net it, and it is quite a skill set to do that.
So you're saying you lift the rod up, and you're pulling the line back, all the slack out of the line,
yep.
and then you don't actually set the hook until you get the line tight.
Correct.
That you're pulling it by your hand.
Correct, right? Because you try to do it actually in conjunction. You try to see it when you see that indicator go down. What you do is you bring the rod back, and at the same time, you're pulling on the line. So you're trying to set the hook with using both your rod and pulling on line. And the first couple times I tried to do it, buddy, I wish you could have videoed it.
Well,
it was hilarious.
It's got to be an art. You know, Diane and I have a place in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. We all know that. And occasionally, we'll see people fishing for panfish who are fly fishing. And it is I think it's beautiful to see that line floating through the air with the sunlight behind it and all that. It's an art, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you what, you know who's a really good fly fisherman, and sometime we'll have to have Rebecca Red back on because Nicole and I talked to her, and she travels the world and professionally fly fishes all over the world.
Have you ever had brown trout? Ever tasted brown trout?
You know, maybe. But, you know, there's something about catch and release, I think, with a lot of fly fishermen in the community because when we fished down in Arkansas, and I probably did it maybe 20, 30 times, we never kept any trout.
Really?
Yeah.
I like trout. You ever had steelhead trout? Steelhead trout's my favorite fish. I'm not saying I'm going to go out and catch them because I never really have,
but, yep,
and probably never will.
I have had some brown trout when I used to go fly fish down in Red Wing. There's a couple creeks down there, and they were smaller trout, and man, there's nothing better than eating a trout that you bake up with some dill, some butter, and lemon, man.
I'm getting excited. I'm sure Brandon is all set for us to take a break. Comes the music. Here comes
the music.
I'll tell you what, we're going to be right back with Rob Dreisland, and Rob is the managing editor of the Outdoor News. He's got a lot of stories. We haven't spoken to him for a long, long time.
I can't wait to hear about the lake story.
It'll be fun. Be back. Talk to you guys soon.
Missed part of Bob Outdoors? No problem. Just click on the weekend tab at mybobcountry.com to listen back to the Four Outdoorsmen anytime.
If you love walleye fishing, then you'll love Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. Plus, you can keep 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit. What does that mean? You can bring home 10 walleyes to the freezer, baby, and there's no slot limit. Devil's Lake just doesn't have world-class walleye fishing. It's got awesome jumbo perch, northern pike, and white bass. For lodging and guide options, up-to-date fishing reports, visit devilslakend.com.
Families fishing forever, the motto of Alumacraft, the best aluminum boat company in the market. Boomer here. Alumacraft boats have been a part of our family's fishing adventures for the last 5 years. Whether we're chasing walleyes, going after bass, or panfish, Alumacraft has always covered the gamut of fishability. Dry rides and amazing space are just part of the value we love in our Alumacraft. To learn more about the Alumacash Red Tag Sale, where you can save up to $2,000, go to alumacraft.com or visit a dealer near you.
Hey, what fire? Lakes Trading Company is up and running at 708 South Lake Street in Forest Lake. Fire may have destroyed the building, but not the spirit and the drive of the Twin Cities' premier firearms destination. If you enjoy the outdoors and love firearms, give Lakes Trading Company a very serious look. I tell you what, they've got everything you could want, whether you're a rookie or a pro, and the staff is second to none. Lakes Trading Company, well, my friend, they're coming back stronger than ever. If you want more information, check out their website. Go to lakestradingco.com.
Osseo Power Sports off Highway 81 in Osseo, the official power sports dealer of the 4 Outdoorsman and Minnesota's top Honda dealer. Check out the spring oil change and inspection special. For $49, you can get an oil and filter change along with a full unit inspection. Check out the great deals on new Hondas and huge deals on last year's models. Mention Bob FM, you get a free Osseo Power Sports t-shirt. Osseo Power Sports off Highway 81 in Osseo. OsseoPowerSports.com.
Hi, this is Kyle Barr from Juice Baits. When you're fishing with soft plastics this season, you're going to rock it when you choose Juice Baits. Juice Baits are a less expensive alternative with a huge variety of options, such as craw tubes, creature baits, Sankos, tubes and jig trailers, swim baits and finesse worms, and a wide selection of crappie baits. See the entire selection of Juice Baits at juicebaits.com and like our Facebook page. When you hit the water, throw the juice. Juice Baits, a Minnesota company.
Country Bob FM. Hey, let's get right to this, man. I'll tell you what, welcome back to the 4 Outdoorsman, Strewman Boomer. Mark Lukey is fishing with fly fishing in Montana, and I'm sure that's where Rob Dreesline would rather be as compared to talking to the boys on the 4 Outdoorsman. Rob, how are you, my friend?
Very well. It's good to hear from you guys. Yeah, I haven't put fly fishing in Montana over the years, but I tell you what, it's a pretty glorious weekend in Minnesota. I was in southeast Minnesota myself this weekend and had a lot of fun with the kids out of doors.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we didn't properly introduce Rob Dreesline. He is the guru and the man behind everything you see in outdoor news. And Rob, Stru and I were talking, and you've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. So welcome back to the 4 Outdoorsman, my friend.
No, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Yeah, you guys can call me dear leader.
Hey, Rob, I don't know where you are right now, but wherever you are, try to stay still. You're kind of cutting in and cutting out a little bit. We can hear you really fine sometimes. We're going to try to fix it on this end as well. All right, Rob, you and I talked a little bit before about what we want to talk about. We want to talk about Twin Metals a little bit, pheasant nesting, bull fishing, Jolly Ann Lake. There's so much to go with. This is your 15 minutes or so. Which one do you want to start with?
Yeah, there is a lot going on. I'll try to find a better spot where maybe I get a little better reception, too. I'm just here in Eden Prairie, where I live.
You're perfect right now.
Okay, well, I'll hang in this spot then.
All right, stand on one leg and raise your right hand.
I know the drill. I've done this before, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on, guys. You know, for starters, I had a great weekend with my kids. We shot some guns. I got them out shooting handgun a little bit. We were going to fish the Mississippi River, but a flood state on the Winona area. We weren't able to do that. But there are a lot of headlines. I'm not sure where you guys want to start. I know you like that Jolly Ann.
Hey, Rob, are you there? We're kind of losing you, buddy.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you. Sorry. You want to try me back and see if we get better cell?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's let you go, and then Brandon will try calling you right back. Let's try that. What do you think, Stuart?
Got it.
Perfect.
Call you. Give me a couple of seconds here, and he'll call you right back. Go ahead.
you know what? I'm really excited to get Rob back on the line because this Lake Julianne story.
Lake Jolly.
Yeah. Is going to be really interesting. And just a teaser for our listeners. This is a lake in the middle of some dude's property, right, Stu?
Yep. That's what he says.
That's what he says, right? And the DNR is
saying... The lake is not in the middle of his property, but he said he has 40 acres that is around a lot of that lake, and there is a boat landing right in the middle of his 40 acres is what he is saying.
But the DNR doesn't agree with that,
do
they?
No,
that's
no.
going to be interesting. So, and we're going to be talking to him about all the rain and what's going on and how that could hurt our pheasant population.
Yeah, and I don't know much about that. You know, it's apparently they... we're going to give it another shot here. All right, a one, a two, a three. Rob Dreisland, are you there?
I am still here, gentlemen. Do I sound any better now?
Oh, you sound a lot better, my friend. Well, welcome back to the Outdoor News Guru, Rob Dreisland on the Four Outdoorsmen. Rob, let's start off talking about this Lake Jolly and why it's such a special and hot topic right now.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a goofy story. It's kind of a fun story. I wrote about it myself last week. We got a landowner out there. His name, I believe it's Rick Chodak. And Rick is a landowner on the lake, and he's disputing the access that he basically goes through his property. He says the state doesn't have a legitimate easement there. And, you know, there's a big argument between the state and Chodak over this. He blocked off the access to the public. This is the access... I go fishing out in western Minnesota, Otter Tail County.
You know, Rob, I'll tell you what, and I read the story as well, and I've been following it for the last couple of weeks. You know, how long has he owned this land?
I'm sorry, one more time. Can you say that again?
How long has he owned this land?
He's been there several decades, I believe. You know, I did a quick story with the man, and I tell you what, he was a lot of fun to interview. Come on out, I'll take you fishing.
Well, that's fun.
You know, it's like I probably don't want to do that, right? I don't want to get in the middle of this whole thing between the DNR and him. But bottom line, the DNR opened up the access. He does the public now in there. He says he's going to charge the DNR full for every person to go through there. He was back to court last week. I haven't heard how that went. I'm hoping maybe this current edition of Outdoor News will report how that went.
All right, what I'm going to do, Rob, for some reason you're cutting out quite a bit, and I don't know why that is. I sincerely apologize. I'm going to tell something about this story, and you kind of get yourself settled again. We'll try one more time. But what Rob was talking about, the guy, he has owned this land for a lot of years, and Rob, let me know, now, was this landing there when he bought the property, or was it something that was added after he bought the property?
The easement existed before he bought the property.
Well, then he's screwed, I think.
Well, you would think so. You would think so. But he's done a lot of research. You know what? I didn't want to get too in the weeds with him on this and devote, you know, a half a page to explaining all the nuances. I'm going to leave that to the lawyers, and we'll see where this comes out. Right now, as I understand it, the judge has told me he had to clear that out before he could even do it. The DNR did it. I think the bottom line is state anglers can go fish Jolly Lake for right now.
How many acres is Jolly Lake?
How many acres?
Yeah, how big is that?
You know, guys, I'm not even sure how big a lake that is. I don't think it's huge by any means, but I think it's a pretty popular little fishing lake out there.
Okay. Go ahead, Boom.
So, Paul, Rob, let's get to the next subject because we have a handful of things to talk to you about. You know, the old, maybe it's not a wise tale, but I've often heard that when you have a rainy spring or late ice, it can really hurt your pheasant population. And we know that the state of Minnesota has kind of been on the downswing with pheasant populations. So what are you kind of seeing out there with this year's crop of pheasants?
A lot of things are contributing to the decline. Yeah, last year I think we had our lowest number of years. I think one of the main things is the loss of conservation reserve program grassland acres. You know, if you've got a lot of grass out there, it gives you kind of a little room for error if you have a out. Well, we don't have as much grass out there, so when we have a bad spring now for nesting conditions, it really hurts. And that kind of sounds like what's transpired here. Even though it's been warm, it's really not good to have a super wet
spoon when those specialty tricks are small. The DNR is saying, kind of occurred out here in Western Minnesota past couple of weeks. The peak pheasant hatch is typically around June 10th. Now, the good news is probably a little later this year because of that late spring we had. A lot of nesting may have a little late start. So maybe things will dry out and we'll get a little better hatch here right now if things dry out a bit. The other good news is it sounds like pheasants, the adult birds, through the winter pretty well. Aaron Sandcliff from the DNR told me that. It's a little worrisome. This rain is not good for little pheasants.
You know, I'll tell you what, it has to be because my understanding is that the number of pheasants has been down the last couple of years, the last quite a few years. This is not going to help. Do hens actually re-nest more than once?
I don't know about more than once, Drew. I know they will re-nest at least once, and there's some hope that maybe some of that will occur. Nicole Davros from the DNR said that she's hopeful. You know, some of these nests that got flooded out, or some of these, basically, they'll re-nest if they're not destroyed. She's hoping that maybe some of that will occur. The flip side there, however, is the later you get into the summer, the more likely you're going to have roadside mowing and haying going on. My dad's place this weekend, they were already cutting hay down in southeast Minnesota. So, now that'll wipe out some of those late nests. So it's a silver lining, but not the best of silver.
You know, Rob, when I think of pheasant populations, and naturally I kind of default to South Dakota, right? They're advertised as the pheasant hunting capital of the world. And I know the state does a lot with stocking pheasants out there for hunters. Has the state of Minnesota ever done anything like that, or has it ever been on the table to talk about that?
You know, Boomer, I'm not so sure how much actual state-sponsored stocking occurs in South Dakota. I think it's very little, if any, state-sponsored. Now, you got a lot of operations out there, operators who you know, have places people come pheasant hunt, and they release some birds. I know that goal. I think, in general, wildlife biologists are not big fans of stocking pheasants. I think they feel like the birds just don't survive real well. They don't get real good reproduction from those birds, and it's generally something states are getting out of. You know, we've got outdoor news titles in some states farther east. Like Pennsylvania, I think, still does some, but I think they're trying to wind down and focus more on we need. If you have quality grass and habitat, the birds will take care of business themselves. Unfortunately, with the federal farm bill decreasing our CRP acres, that's a tall order.
You know, Rob, one question I had is, you know, over the last few years, we've seen quite a success story with turkeys and turkey hunting, right?
Yep,
I mean,
yep.
It used to be a lottery, and now it's not a lottery after the first couple seasons.
Now all you need is like turkeys, a 1957 Chevy. And
Do the turkeys compete for the environment with the pheasants for, you know, prime nesting?
It's a good area. Good question.
So you're asking if turkeys and pheasants are competing for nesting habitat?
Yep.
You know, Stan Tequila, our nature columnist, just had a column on this a couple of weeks ago. I really think there's very little competition between turkeys and pheasants. I mean, all the turkey nests I've ever bought tend to be in woodland areas, or at least kind of dead zones, right? You know, areas that have been planted to trees recently. Pheasants tend to be an open grassland nest bird. I think there's very little competition between turkeys and pheasants. I know that something comes up, a question that comes up, because we have so many darn turkeys these days, and pheasants are going to open.
Hey, Rob, Kurt Vasek, maybe it's Vasek from Appleton, he's a DNR wildlife guy down there, said that he hasn't seen a pheasant brood yet this spring, and that seems really, really, really rare. How soon will we know whether this high water spring has definitely negatively affected the number of pheasants? Do they do a count in August or September or October? How do they do that count?
But let me answer two questions. First off, I started making calls on this pheasant thing a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
They were saying, Rob, it's really late. We're not seeing anything.
Yeah.
Then I made calls again Monday and Tuesday, and I was starting to have guys say, we're starting to see some birds. But, yes, the way they all closed the conversation out through was, we will not know for sure until those August roadside counts, you know, in a couple months here, when they go out and they listen to crowing counts, and they've been doing it for about 50 years, and they've got some, you know, they can use that data to determine roughly how many birds are out there.
All right, we're going to change topics again here. Thanks for talking about the pheasants and all that's happening in 2018. Hey, you went bull fishing, pal. That's a now. Are you a regular at bull fishing, or is this one of your first times?
You know, I did it a lot when I was a kid on the river down in that Pomona area. We just had remedial equipment, you know, fiberglass. We didn't have sights, fiberglass bows, fiberglass arrows. But we had a lot of fun. It seemed like we shot a lot of gar and a lot of carp. And once in a while, you get a bigmouth buffalo, which I think buffalo, if you smoke those, are a legitimate snacking item. But I have done it a couple times in recent history. The equipment's come a long way, and it's just gotten popular. And it is. The guy called the kids the Plywood Mafia. All these platforms are built on their parents'
bones. Yeah, that's a funny name. They call them the Plywood Mafia. Even the young kids are getting into this bull fishing thing. And Boomer's going to ask a question here in a second here, but let me ask you this, because I know you're not a big fan of carp by any means, and the more carp you can kill, the better off you're going to be. You want to drain all the lakes, get rid of the carp, then fill the lakes again, but do you think this is actually affecting bull fishing? Is it affecting the population of carp in the state of Minnesota?
You know, the DNR guys I talk to don't think it is. They think other things are affecting carp, like less winter kill, which is allowing more bluegills to survive, and then bluegills vacuum up carp eggs. Think that bluegills are pushing carp a little bit. But I tell you what, guys I talk to who are on the water doing this say they see a lot fewer carp than they did 15, 20 years ago when the sport started ramping up.
So, Rob, when you talk about the technology advancements you've seen in bow fishing, when I think of a bow, I think of like 350 to 380 feet per second when you're hunting big game. What's the trajectory coming off of these newer bows now for bow fishing for carp or whatever the species is you're trying to harvest?
You know, you're talking speed, feet per second?
Yeah.
I think it's probably in the same range of stuff that guys like you and I use for deer. I don't know that they're any faster. But there's sights now that, you know, adjust for the refraction factor, you know, with water. There's all these new lighted systems. There's better retrieving systems. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, you had a spring and hope it didn't get wrapped around your foot after you shot the arrow and pull you into the water. You know, I think more of that kind of technology really improved so much.
And then, you know, I've never bow fished, but like, is there a depth? Like, how deep will that arrow go after you shoot it and still be successful in harvesting that fish?
You know, I'd have to. That's a good question. I don't know enough about. I'm not an expert enough to answer that. I know from my own experience, it seemed like 3, 4, 5 feet was about all I trusted. But I bet with some of these newfangled compounds that are 2 feet you mentioned, I bet they go a lot deeper into the water.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you were talking about the newfangled equipment that a lot of the bull fishermen are using, but you guys were fishing, you look like Davy Crockett there, right? The old-fashioned longbows. Is that what you're still using?
That's what I used when I was a kid. Now they got single cam compounds, the same kind of equipment that they're using for deer hunting. Yeah.
Kind of fun.
Well, Mr. Rob, thank you for joining us on the Four Outdoorsmen and Bob Country. You look forward to having you on every time, and good luck on your next adventures, and we can't wait to have you back on the show, buddy.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Sorry for the technical difficulties early, but a lot going on. I'm looking for a Boundary Waters trip later this summer and Game Fair. I would just remind everyone, we're doing a gubernatorial debate out of Game Fair on August 18th. That'd be a good thing to talk about.
We'll be part of it, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. Rob Griesline, Outdoor News. Thanks, buddy. We'll be back in the Four Outdoors.
With Lee from, or Tiffany from the Crush TV.
Yeah.
Just enjoying Bob Outdoors with the Four Outdoorsmen on a Sunday evening. It's a good thing.
If you love walleye fishing, then you'll love Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. Plus, you can keep 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit. What does that mean? You can bring home 10 walleyes to the freezer, baby, and there's no slot limit. Devil's Lake just doesn't have world-class walleye fishing. It's got awesome jumbo perch, northern pike, and white bass. For lodging and guide options, up-to-date fishing reports, visit devilslakend.com.
Families fishing forever. The motto of Alumacraft, the best aluminum boat company in the market. Boomer here. Alumacraft boats have been a part of our family's fishing adventures for the last 5 years. Whether we're chasing walleyes, going after bass, or panfish, Alumacraft has always covered the gamut of fishability. Dry rides and amazing space are just part of the value we love in our Alumacraft. To learn more about the Alumacash Red Tag Sale, where you can save up to $2,000, go to alumacraft.com or visit a dealer near you.
Hey, what fire? Lakes Trading Company is up and running at 708 South Lake Street in Forest Lake. Fire may have destroyed the building, but not the spirit and the drive of the Twin Cities' premier firearms destination. If you enjoy the outdoors and love firearms, give Lakes Trading Company a very serious look. I'll tell you what, they've got everything you could want, whether you're a rookie or a pro, and the staff is second to none. Lakes Trading Company, well, my friend, they're coming back stronger than ever. If you want more information, check out their website. Go to lakestradingco.com.
Osseo Power Sports off Highway 81 in Osseo, the official power sports dealer of the Four Outdoorsmen and Minnesota's top Honda dealer. Check out the spring oil change and inspection special. For $49, you can get an oil and filter change along with a full unit inspection. Check out the great deals on new Hondas and huge deals on last year's models. Mention Bob FM, you get a free Osseo Power Sports t-shirt. Osseo Power Sports off Highway 81 in Osseo. OsseoPowerSports.com.
Hi, this is Tyler Barr from Juice Baits. Juice Baits is a Minnesota company based out of Brainerd. Juice Baits are tried, true, and tested by me and my brother Kyle, who are both high school fishing state champions. And we know a good bait, so we came up with Juice Baits. Buy the whole line of soft plastics infused with the juice and get ready for boatloads of fish this season. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and see the whole Juice Baits story on the web at juicebaits.com.
Total Country Bob FM.
Welcome back to the Four Outdoorsmen with Stru and Boomer and my gorgeous wife, the fourth outdoorsman tonight. Diane is in the corner just kind of doing her thing over there. You want to say anything on the air, Sugar Plum? No? Oh, she's Marcel Marceau. She's using hand language.
Newspaper over there, too.
Hand sign language over there, yeah.
Tough competition.
Hey, anybody on the line there, pal? Do we have Tiffany?
Yeah, and
on
our sponsors.
Oh, that's right. Hang on, Tiffany. I know you're a big shot, but we got to talk about our sponsors first. Go ahead, Boone.
Yeah, Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. I had a hoot filming with Midwest Outdoors there just a couple weeks ago in Alumacraft boats. I love that 205 competitor. My wife loves that XB200, best aluminum boat in the market. And let's not forget about what kept the sun off of us and kept us comfy, Blackfish gear.
Love it. Osseo Power Sports, boy, I tell you, no matter what season you are in, Osseo's Power Sports has everything for you guys. They're right in Osseo, about two blocks from Boomer's house. Fishing Buddy Cooler, tell you what, it's the best little gig. It keeps your stuff cold for a long, long time. And the Lakes Trading Company, the best gun shop in the Twin Cities. They're up and running right in Forest Lake. Go to lakestradingco.com. Do we have Tiffany on the air?
Yes, you got Tiffany on the air.
Hey, there she is. Tiffany, thanks.
We got her.
Thanks for joining us. You're in the car with Mom right now, huh?
Yes, and two little babies, so I cannot promise anything.
We're
hour six right now, so.
Wow. Well, hey, Tiffany, Boomer here. Thanks for joining us on the Four Outdoorsmen on Bob Country. I'm a big fan of your show, and I was really bummed out. I couldn't be at the show you guys were at the, I think it was at the Coliseum, wasn't it, in
yeah.
March?
Yeah.
Because I was actually catfishing through the ice for Ice Team University, helping some folks out there, but big fan of your guys' show, and I love the fact how you involve the whole family. So congratulations on all your success, and I look forward to meeting you at one of these shows sometime.
Hey, thanks. We appreciate that. It's a zoo, but yeah, we definitely involve the whole family.
Yeah, we're talking with Tiffany Lukoski, her husband Lee, and Tiffany just are on the way back to Iowa from northern Minnesota someplace, and they have a television show called The Crush in their 10th season, I believe, on the Outdoor Channel. You can find them Tuesdays and Sundays, I think, 4:30 here on Tuesdays and 6:30 in the evening, I think, on Sundays. That's The Crush on the Outdoor Channel. I'll tell you what, now you're just coming from up north and heading back to Iowa. Where were you? Where are you coming from?
We are coming from Aiken, Minnesota.
It's a nice part of the world. I was up there. I tell you what, I went backwoods.
It's beautiful up there.
I went backwoods fishing this last year in Hill City, which is Lake Aiken area. And we went back about 3 miles on four-wheelers, and it was an absolute mess. But it was a memory. Oh, there's lots of water up there. But there were so many windfalls and such a big storm up there, it broke every trail in the world. But it's a beautiful part of the world.
It really is. My mom and my family have had a lake home up there for as long as I can remember, and we make the 9-hour trek from Iowa every year, a couple times a year, and I just absolutely love it up there.
Good for you. Go ahead, Boomer.
So Tiffany, what's new with Crush TV? What's some new interesting stuff you can share with our listeners on Bob Country?
Gosh, you know, we got a lot of stuff coming up. Our new season's coming out in just another 2 weeks, which is really awesome. And then just like our normal stuff, you know, we got huge elk, we got mule deer, we have Lee actually not shooting a sheep. He went sheep hunting last year and he did not get one. We got huge whitetails. I mean, we just got pretty much a little bit of everything and had one of our best seasons ever.
You know, Tiffany, I think about you and Lee and the family and been doing this for 10 years. Two questions for you. One, is it really hard to pick where you're going to go hunting? Because you guys always keep it fresh. And then how do you determine where you're going to be doing your trips?
Well, I would like to say I take credit for most of that. I mean, also, you know what? I did do a couple trips this year that I really wanted to do that I actually booked. But normally, Lee kind of has, like, anything that's, like, a little bit on his bucket list, he'll plan for, you know, a few years, and there's certain things that we put in for. Like, we got drawn for mountain goats this year in Alaska. And so we're going to do that with our goats this year. So that was, like I said, that's on his bucket list. So we wanted to do that. So every year he tries to pick something that he's always wanted to do, and fortunately we still have show budgets that cover that, so we're able to go on to the whole time because we still have a show, so which is awesome. But like I said, now all of a sudden our babies are getting a little bit bigger, so I'm like, okay, I'm ready to start duck hunting again. I want to go pheasant hunting this year. I mean, so there's a few trips that I'm like, okay, we are doing this, and I just planned a trip to Washington State for turkeys. So, like, for me, I'm like, okay, I would try to get our kids to, like, certain places. It's like, we have family out in Washington that haven't met a lot of our kids, that are any of our kids, I should say. So I'm like, okay, if we can combine a hunting trip and a family trip, then that's awesome. So he planned some of them on his bucket list, and I planned stuff where we could go with our family and make a good memory with that.
Tiffany, you guys are so busy. How old are your kids now? They were at the show with us at the turkey class. How old are they?
Say that again?
How old are your children?
Oh, the show was awesome.
No, how old are your kids?
Oh, the kids? I kind of have a bad connection. I can't hear you all that great.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Did you say how old are our kids?
Yeah, how old are they?
How old are they? I'm like, how old? How about the third question, right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Cameron just turned 3 in March, and Reagan turned 1 in April. So they're pretty little still.
You know,
so
it's
pretty much troopers to do some of this stuff with us.
I can't picture how you're going to handle this, because your show is so successful. It's going to keep on going and going and going. I can't picture how you're going to handle this when your kids are 8, 9, and 10 years old and they get into all the sports and dance and gymnastics. It's going to be a challenge.
Well, we're kind of hoping they don't want to do any of that. we'll have to see. You know, I mean, it'll be interesting. We just kind of play it by ear. You know, fortunately, like you said, they're small right now. But, you know, already they're out on the tractors with us. They're out on the farms with us. They go on hunts with us. That's what they enjoy to do, you know. So it's like, hopefully we could just keep them going in that direction and not get them on traveling baseball, basketball, all the kind of sports stuff. And we have them down in Iowa, but not like so much in the cities, you know what I mean?
So Tiffany, with you guys hunting all over the country, you know, Mr. Drew, when I talked about my wife and I celebrating our anniversary, we went fishing, right?
Yeah.
And you said that's
like a
mailman. Like a
mailman taking a walk on his day off.
That's what we do. And Tiffany, what do you guys do to relax as a family?
Well, it's funny you say that. We go up north just like we've been doing right now. But for like us, I mean, the fun things that we do is just, you know, go check our farms, and we all go together, and the ranger and stuff. You know, we have a chief that's a few years old, and you take the top off and go check, you know, just our farms and our fields and stuff. I mean, you know, we kind of just really enjoy the simple life, in all honesty. You know, it's like you just really try to appreciate just slowing down a little bit and just really just admiring the beauty out there and just spending time together. I mean, we go on vacation a few places. I mean, you know, like next year we're going to Hawaii for turkey hunting, and then obviously the vacation. But, you know, we spend a lot of time up north now. Cameron's just getting old enough to fish and stuff, so we do a lot of that stuff. But, you know, we're really pretty low-key, in all honesty. We just enjoy being together.
That's awesome. You know, with the popularity that you guys have, Tiffany. Is it hard when you try to go on those vacations and you get recognized and trying to like focus on the kids and focus on each other? And I'm guessing everywhere you go, someone's recognizing you too.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, if we're like at a deer show, then it's pretty legit. But if you're just like out and about, you get a few people here or there, but everybody's always so nice. And, you know, they're so nice to our kids and stuff. And, you know, we're just grateful anybody watches and tries to and wants to come up and talk to us. It's like, you know, let's be honest, our all common interest is hunting. And it's like, well, I don't care who you are. We're always going to talk hunting and fishing. So that's no big deal.
Hey, Tiffany, you talked a little bit about your farms. And I want to... Will you explain to us how you guys manage? You have a strict whitetail management program. How much land do you have, and how does that work?
Well, it's pretty crazy. I mean, in all honesty, a lot of people think Lee's got a lot of help for it, but he really doesn't. He's just got a couple guys and me, and of course, I've been out of a lot of it just the last few years having kids, we're home with their kids. So we have in Iowa almost 6,500 acres that he takes care of and manages, and that's bought with a couple partners, so it's all ours. And then we also bought a farm in Illinois right now, and that's 3,700 acres. And so far, he's got to find somebody to be the land manager down there. But that's a big step for him because he doesn't like to, like, relinquish that control. He likes to do everything himself, so he's about killing himself. You know, it's like every field that we have, for the most part, he planted. He's just got certain ways that he does it, and he's got certain things that he does, so... it's crazy. I mean, it's a lot of work, and thank God it actually rained last week. Oh, he probably would have never won a boat.
You know, I was watching a couple of your shows over the last couple of weeks, and I know sometimes you guys will actually watch a deer for 4 years and watch it grow for 4 years before you even try to harvest it. You know which ones are going to have the biggest racks. It is an amazing, you let deer go that we would die to be able to hunt, but there's some big ones down there.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, and you know, and that's Lee. I mean, that's straight Lee, and of course our management strategy has changed over the years from, you know, what we used to do to like what we're doing now. And, you know, sometimes it works out to follow a deer like that. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, I mean, if you happen to have a mature deer out there, normally we'll, you know, try to shoot them, obviously, because you don't get that opportunity that often. But, you know, really, he likes to grow a deer to see what it can actually do. You know what I mean? When it gets to its potential.
Right, yeah.
Like if it's had the right food and stuff, that's what he really, really enjoys. I mean, the harvest for him is the smallest part, straight up.
Let's talk about your
and,
little...
In fact, almost, I should say, he almost is like, he shoots one and he's like, oh, geez, what would have been next year? I'm like, you just shot a 7-year-old deer. I'm pretty sure you should be really happy. And he's happy, but it's like, it's almost like he's like, oh, now what am I going to focus on? You know what I mean?
Everyone knows all about you guys on The Crutch. We're talking with Tiffany Lukoski from The Crutch, and they all know about your hunting and your television show and all of that, but they don't know much about your little things on the side. Talk about your jewelry. Are you still involved in your jewelry making?
The jewelry? Yeah, we do some jewelry. Not quite as much as we used to, just because we don't do quite as many consumer shows as we used to do, but that's been kind of fun. You know, I've always liked, let's be honest, it's like I am a hunter and a farm girl and everything else, but in all honesty, I absolutely love fashion. I love, you know, clothing. I buy a lot of stuff online, and sometimes I can't find what I want. So then I'm like, well, let's just make stuff because I feel like if it's something I want to buy, then other people will want to buy it too. And it's been a big success.
Yeah, if you go to their website, go to The Crutch, you find Lee and Tiffany, go to The Crutch and go to News, N-E-W-S, and it'll show a bunch of things that she makes, a lot of bracelets and whatnot. It is really classy stuff. You're a pretty talented young lady. Go ahead, Boomer.
You know, Tiffany, with you and Lee getting to travel all over the country and do all these amazing hunts that you share with such a huge audience, are there a couple things still on your guys' bucket list that you want to still do for hunting or fishing?
Oh, totally. I mean, for me, straight up, it's a moose. You know, Lee shot a giant Yukon moose a few years ago, and I did not get to go on that hunt. They only had one opening, and he took it and left me home, and that's always been something I've wanted to do. I mean, I shot one moose years ago in Alberta, but it's not the same as a big Yukon moose, so Yukon moose hunting is totally on my bucket list. And as far as Lee, oh my gosh, I can't even answer that for him. But I know he wants a sheep grand slam. You know what? I don't even know if I want to ask him what he's on his bucket list.
There you go. Hey, I'll tell you what, you're talking about bucket list. And Mark, not Mark, but Mark Lukey is our producer and the fourth outdoorsman. He's fishing in Montana right now. But Boomer was talking.
Nice.
Yeah, he's fly fishing in Montana. His first time ever getting a chance to go there. He's on the Bighorn River right now. We just spoke with him. But anyway, Boomer was talking about his bucket list. We're talking about elk hunting, and he's never really had a chance to go elk hunting. He wants to go down to New Mexico. That's his bucket list. But I was reading in the one of the Wisconsin newspapers. I was going to ask Boomer this.
Yeah.
They have an elk hunt this year in Wisconsin. They have three seasons. There's four licenses that they give away for each season, and there were 38,000 applicants for those four licenses. It cost you $4 to apply. So four times 38 is $130,000 that they made from the applications, and only four people got licenses, and it cost about almost $300 for the license. Wow.
That is pretty crazy. I mean, that's pretty, you know, it would be kind of cool. I mean, like, Kentucky has that elk season, and they've grown their herd through an amazing elk. I mean, there's some huge bulls there, but I know there's still something about the mountains and hiking in the mountains and getting up there and stuff, but that would be pretty cool.
Hey, you know, Tiffany, with all your adventures, I'm thinking back a year ago, my wife and I were hunting out there for Devil's Lake and North Dakota Tourism and Filming, and we were hunting over some chiseled plowed fields and over some sloughs, and all of a sudden we saw what we thought were like these cows crossing over by our decoys, and it was a mama moose with two calves.
Oh, cool.
And it was one of the coolest things that we've ever seen. Have you guys ever had a unique thing like that?
I had no idea they had moose in North Dakota.
Yeah, me neither till I saw them. It was kind of crazy. Have you guys ever seen something crazy like that on one of your hunting adventures?
Yeah, you know, like Alberta is like one of our favorite places. We used to spend a lot of time up there. We're not up there quite as much anymore. But it was just always so neat because it was kind of the same thing. You'd be sitting there deer hunting and all of a sudden you'd hear an elk bugle and a moose would walk out. You might see a black bear. I mean, just different animals, you know what I mean? It's like, obviously, in Iowa, you're probably just going to see deer, you're going to see turkeys, you know, just the normal stuff. But it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, it's just that sit there and all of a sudden you're like, what in the world is that? Oh, it's a moose. It's like you just don't expect it.
Hey, Tiffany, I'll tell you what, we're going to let you guys go because you got to head south. And Lee's a very trusting man because he knows when I met you guys at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic that I was flirting with you the entire show. So he trusts you more than he's a very trusting man. I'll tell you what, Lee and Tiffany Lekoski, the Crush Outdoor Channel, check them out. Thank you very much, young lady. We're going to see you next year at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic, we hope, and we'll follow you on the Outdoor Channel as well.
Thanks again, Tiffany.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, you guys. Take care, and good luck hunting this year.
You too.
Bet. Be safe. Hey, we got to go. Boomer's got something to say.
And don't forget to get outdoors.